Support for our show comes solely from listeners like yourself. If you like what we're doing, help us by sharing the pod on social media and leaving us a 5-star review, whether it's on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or Audible. Thanks again for listening, and without further ado, let's start the show.
My name is Nicole Teagarden. I teach second grade reading and writing and social studies. I am sticking with my union to protect my students' access to quality literature in an open and diverse and inclusive classroom library.
Hey guys, welcome back to PCTA's Fire Podcast. I'm Brennan Pickett. I'm the Fire Co-Chair and FEA Director here at PCTA.
I'm Philip Del Castro, Fire Co-Chair at PCTA as well.
I'm Stephanie Rosal, Mathematics Teacher at San Pete High.
And I'm Mary Gressley, ESE Teacher at Richard O. Jacobson Technical High School in Seminole.
And we're here today to talk about an issue that is pretty relevant to our ESE and mathematics teacher. And it's this idea of why is the teacher shortage failing our children? And yes, I do want to use that strong language today. Kind of a light episode, I think, right? How is it failing our children? And I'm looking at math and ESE for specific reasons today because they are seeing specific shortages, which is greatly hurting our children in different ways. So how does the lack of personnel in our field, or in your fields rather, affect your day-to-day work? So I kind of want to go to Stephanie and Mary and say, what does your day-to-day work kind of look like?
Well, if I think about the shortage, I think about during the last quarter, I did have the opportunity to teach two courses at the same time. I don't know how I did it, but it happened. And I went back and forth to them and hoping that they would do what I was asking them to do in between. And that was because we were missing a teacher and all her classes had to be covered somehow. There was not enough coverage even from us. I sacrificed my planning period and it was kind of nuts for a while.
And I can speak as a St. Pete High colleague of yours. This is not a St. Pete High issue. This is kind of a district statewide issue.
Yes,
where we're seeing
absolutely
just empty classrooms. And then what do you do with these kids? They still have to learn something, right? That's the idea.
Math classrooms specifically are empty quite a bit too.
Well, because if you think about it, these math teachers can get better jobs.
Oh, yeah, yes. Definitely. I mean, if you are going to get a math degree, who's going to be a teacher? You think about how much money are you going to make as an actuary or simple other positions, and it's guaranteed. And you have ordered work hours.
And you don't have to take work home with you at night.
Yes.
And so on a normal day, Rizal, like, what does it look like from beginning to end for you?
Well, I usually right now I'm coming in around 7 o'clock. I got a little bit better with not coming in too early. I curtailed my eagerness a little bit. So I will prepare my board if it's not been prepared yet. And yes, we're going to have a class. And I will start with a first period. Luckily, in first period, I have a pretty good group right now. And then it starts getting hot and heavy with period two, who is very lively. And right afterwards, I have my planning period. Period four is 30% special needs. And period five is 36% special needs, not counting ELLs because it's not really a special needs category. And it shows, especially my period five, right before lunch. That is the strenuous period I have. And I do have ESE support, but not all the time. The problem that I think my ESE support have, they basically have to know as much math as I do if they want to be super effective, because a lot of their students are per plan required to basically have a hand-holding. It's not enough, and it's not that successful just to remind them, hey, there's a job to be done. Hey, you know, there's notes to be taken. Hey, why don't you open up your book page at that prescribed level? They are, for the most part, succeeding only if they have one-on-one engagement. With that amount of students, we would need to really have more staff in the classroom that is versed in math, or the support would be at a lower level.
I think this is a good transition to Mary here, because you are the ESE teacher.
So yes, I am.
Do you know what she's talking about? I think a lot of us don't really understand what you do. I think a lot of people don't understand what an ESE teacher does on a daily basis.
Well, in addition to dropping into a classroom for support to 1 to up to 15 or 16 students in a classroom, I write their IEPs. I follow up with them to make sure that they're doing all the work that they need to do. I also do progress reports for their IEP, talk to parents on a daily basis, work with my colleagues that are in the ESE department with me, and we split between math and English, and then we go into U.S. history or science or whatever other classes we need to support. So every day is something different. I mean, I have a set schedule,
right,
and I'm not teaching a class, so I'm in the classroom all day long. I have a planning period, and then I have extra periods to work on paperwork. But 99% of the time, those paperwork periods, I'm running around putting out fires or making copies or doing this or running here or doing that.
And just from my own personal experience of what I've seen, I've always seen ESE kind of historically rather cut every single year.
Absolutely.
Yes, you do have people like in Rizal's field, math, where mm-hmm. obviously teaching isn't paying out for them, right? And they can get a better job somewhere else. But then I think about what's happening with ESE, because I've only been teaching for 6 years at St. Pete, but every year there's always unit cuts, and every year they're always saying, well, we'll just get rid of the ESE teacher. And then the new school year starts and they're scrambling to find a new ESE teacher. What do you see at your school?
It's hard to say, because at my school, our principal and AP really try hard to make sure that we have appropriate staffing. We just don't have the staff to give them everything that they need. And it's not just because people don't want to work there. It's because you can't hire somebody to do this job. Because the amount of work that they ask me to do, I need to make 10 times what I make now. And that's not asking for more money, because I can't get it anyway.
How long does it take you to write an IEP on average?
Depending on what I have to put in it, it can take me anywhere from 1 day to a week.
Jeez. Oh, wow.
Because I have to wait for the teachers to return information to me.
Oh, yes.
Right, yeah.
So the classroom teacher has to return information. If they don't return it timely, then I have to wait.
I mean, we get that also, too, yeah, where like we get all these IEP and 504 messages in our inboxes, and there's just so many of them. And it definitely does not take us a week to do those.
They hand out 504s like Chiclets.
They do. Yes. I mean, everybody has a 504, but I mean, mm-hmm. they do still need the information from mm-hmm. them. And a lot of times it's, I need 504 or I need IEP information for this kid. I'm like, I haven't seen this kid. This kid just doesn't come to class. I don't know anything. How are their test scores? Be like, beats me.
Yes. And you know, all you can do is give us the information that you have.
Exactly.
Right.
That's all we're asking for is, are they in class? Are they not in class? How can we get them in class? What can we do to get them there? How can we give them the services that they need? Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we're doing ourselves a disservice. I have a master's degree in English. Mm-hmm. What am I doing? I'm writing IEPs.
Using those English skills.
Yeah. A lot of writing.
I mean, and I'm not standing here trying to brag that I have a master's degree. That's not it. I figured if I'm going to do this, I'm going to go all the way and get as much education as I possibly can. I stopped after a master's because I didn't really want to go to school anymore.
Yeah.
And well, I was older when I went to school. So,
I mean, I think for some of us in this room, we're looking at the possibility or the prospect of getting a master's degree and just saying it's not worth it.
Not in education.
In this job for sure.
Now, I know with an English degree, I could go and do anything else I wanted and make a lot more money. But I like being with kids.
Right.
You're listening to PCTA's Fire Podcast. I'm here today with Philip El Castro, Stephanie Rizal, and Mary Gressley. We're talking about how our day-to-day work is as a teacher. Well, I want to bring this back to the student for a second. How does the lack of professional support contribute and determine overall student performance and behavior on campus? How does this keep failing our children? I'm going to go back to that rhetoric again. It's failing our children, guys. And how?
If I could say just one thing. My youngest niece is on the autism spectrum. And my sister moved house to get into a better school district for ESE services specifically. So the district in Georgia that she's in now has the services that my niece needs, and they are very happy. They are very, you know, my niece is thriving there.
That's why a lot of the students come to our school, because it's small. Yeah.
We can house a small environment. These kids are applying for technical programs like nursing and veterinary assisting, but they don't have the academic rigor to meet that requirement. So here's what's happening. They fail the program, but yet they're getting the small services, the small student body, and the small educational environment that their parent wants them to have.
And when I talk to my sister about teaching here in Florida, and she says, or I'll tell her stories with my ESE kids, because I have classes that are also like upwards of more than 40% ESE, which is a challenge to teach a college level course to kids that need services that are routinely unavailable because they're being pulled away for test proctoring the support or being pulled away for any number of things that are not doing what I need the help with, right? So I'm supposed to be teaching a college level course with no help. So I tell my sister these stories and she says, are these kids getting anything from your class? I said, there's absolutely not. There's no way. Because I can't, you know, I can accommodate, you know, I can differentiate my lesson plans and my learning and what we're doing. But a lot of it is just like, are you here doing something? That's the best we can do right now. Because I got 35 kids in this room. And some of them, and like I said, in some of my classes, almost half of them need like special attention. And I got 47 minutes to knock all this out, plus fill out all the IEP and 504 paperwork that comes through the inbox at the same time.
And we have to track all the services that we provide to them through their IEP every time we work with them. So if you have a class of 15 students where you're providing services, you have to I have to document for the district so that they can see that we're giving them the appropriate services.
Yeah. So if I can intervene there, I have in my classroom ESE support person, and she is regularly super busy with just the administration of what she did during the day. And while possibly another student could benefit, and I just determined for like my period five, I have, when I wrote this down, so I have 12 ESE categorized students. If the support person alone would spend 4 minutes per student in those 45 minutes. I know that at minimum half of them, if not 75% of those special needs kids, would need her next to themselves. That's my observation.
And I'm thinking about how many ESE teachers we have at our school alone. It's what, maybe a handful? And I'm sure it's less at Jacobson, right?
We have four.
Four? That's actually pretty impressive.
Well, that's including our VE specialist.
But I think I keep thinking about, is it really enough? And people... People love public schools because we do accommodate to these children. We do provide support for them. So every year, I feel like it's taking more of a hit. Are we capable of doing this job correctly?
No.
And that's the end of the show, guys. Thank you.
Simple answer, no. No, we're not, because we're doing a disservice to these kids. We're not teaching them what they need to know. We're not teaching them how to survive. We're teaching them how to Google the answer. Look it up on Google, because I really don't have time to spend with you. Not that I would ever tell a student that, ever, but that's basically what they do. They watch what the other kids do. So they figure out, well, I'll just figure it out.
And Stephanie, you teach algebra, right?
No, I teach geometry.
But you did teach algebra.
But I also teach algebra at the same time.
Right.
Because
she's Superwoman!
No, because a lot of students are simply did not even pass the Algebra 1 EOC because of COVID and other reasons, not only COVID. And so I have some students that have come to my classroom with an elementary school level of math knowledge, because I diagnose all my students because I want to know how they come in. Right in the first week, everybody has to take this diagnostics test. And then I see what I've got right now. What do they remember? What do they have? What do I need to fill in for? And I know that half of my time right now teaching geometry is really teaching algebra, because that's not a prereq. That's something now that I have to also include in my lesson, which is an interesting thing, because I do have a stretch from super high-level performers all the way to elementary-level math diagnostics results. So I have to somewhat stretch myself out, diversify, give certain students certain privileges to work ahead. And I cannot, definitely not, wait until the last student understands the concept. I don't have that possibility. I have a pacing guide that I need to keep. And all students are expected to have a certain performance level at state standards.
And I'm noticing, because your geometry, mm-hmm. right, they come from algebra first. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that these students are prepared for geometry, even though they're being pushed through?
No. I mean, and for what reason, we can say COVID, right? But I feel also that, especially for special needs, a lot of students are getting pushed through until finally in high school, it hits real world. And I feel as their high school teacher, if I just kind of go, oh, Johnny here doesn't need to know five of the standards, let's just let him go by. That's, first of all, that's not ethical.
No.
Second of all, I sign basically up to standards that the state of Florida gives me. And now what am I going to do? ESE department likes me to make it possible that all my ESE students will pass at the highest grade possible. Then, on the other hand, I have a pacing guide. So there's a constant pull back and forth. And at some point, I had to just say, hey, I'm going to do what I think is right, which is I'm going to stay with the state standards. That's what I signed up on. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to try to do my best to include all students. Some of them can work ahead and they have privileges. They don't have to even pay attention to me because some of them basically can teach themselves in my class.
Us, because we teach like upper class people, or I do. I teach upper classmen in high
snob.
School.
You snob.
I mean, no.
Yes, they are in 11th grade is what I mean by that. So, but because of our school and where our kids come from, and I mean, when I first started teaching, me and Rizal started teaching the same year.
Yeah.
And so far in my classroom, I've had to go over with 11th graders what syllables are. Mm-hmm. And then like almost every single time we'll read something. And then I hear from somewhere in the room, what is XVI? And I'm like, oh yeah, Roman numerals. I forgot that some schools just skip that entirely.
Yes.
So I have to like go back and go over like mm-hmm. things that should be foundational knowledge that is just missing for some reason. And that's across the board. That's ESE, that's 504, that's traditional students. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we just don't know what we're going to get just because of where we are.
You, just like Roselle was saying, you see it in English, you see it in math, especially.
Mm-hmm. The three
R's.
Write.
They can't write, they can't read, they don't know words. They look at these SAT and ACT words and they're like, I need to know that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it's so mixed too that it's like it's hard to focus in on any one thing in particular. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm not advocating for separating everybody mm-hmm. out, but I mean, we should have the support for it. Because if I had people in the room helping me with some of these kids who are missing like very basic fundamental reading and writing skills, you know, we could just move the class on.
Well, but the district wants us to do pullouts.
I've never seen that.
In high school. And I'm like, no, I'm not pulling these kids out.
You are listening to PCTA's Fire Podcast, and I'm here today with Philip Belcastro, Stephanie Rizal, and Mary Gressley giving an in-depth look at how Florida's drastic teacher shortage is ultimately failing to provide meaningful accommodations for our children. Big news happened a few days ago. Big news. HB 1, House Bill 1, was signed into law on March 27th by Ron DeSantis, which will divert billions of taxpayer dollars out of public schools and into private and charter school voucher programs. How will this law worsen the current situation we find ourselves in? I kind of want to speculate here because...
Oh, I can speculate real well.
Oh, what's here? What do you think about this one, Mary?
Oh, yeah. So what's going to happen is all of these ESE students are going to get pulled and they're going to get these wonderful vouchers and they're going to go to these private schools and these private schools are going to go, yeah, no, I don't think we can help you. You're going to have to go back to public school. And they're going to come back to us and they're going to be further behind than they already are.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to pick them up and brush them off and keep moving forward with them.
Are we setting up public schools to be almost exclusively... essentially what private schools and charter schools are casting off.
Yep.
And then it's going to make our jobs infinitely harder with infinitely less support.
We'll have more discipline problems. We'll have more ESE kids. We'll have more 504 kids. We'll have more kids with ELL and language issues, reading issues, you name it.
Wow.
And I think the punchline here, right, is they're going to come back to us, but that money they got from that voucher,
they ain't going to get that back.
No, we're not getting that back. That's going to stay into the private and charter schools. Mm-hmm. So we get the problems. No, I'm honestly,
but not the money.
But not the money, right?
Yeah. Well, and problems is a broad description. It's not really all
the work.
We're going to have to do more work with even less than what we currently have, which isn't a whole lot.
And you got to think about it. When there's less funding, there's even less ESE support. There's even less math teachers. Mm-hmm. There's more students in the classroom, mm-hmm. right? And it just keeps, the pile on just keeps happening. And yes. It's nonstop.
In a profession that people are fleeing from.
Yes. In a profession that people are
teacher
fleeing
shortage.
From.
And, yes. Teacher shortage.
And teacher schools are mm-hmm. closing because they don't have yeah. the enrollment.
Mm-hmm. So, and then I'm wondering, with the private schools, what kind of standards are they going to teach on? Do they, are they required to obey by the same?
No.
You know, they don't. So where's the quality coming from? Where's the data that that is the solution, you know, that all private schools or charter schools or religious-based schools do such a great job compared to public schools?
Because the governor said so.
That's well, I would like to see the data discussed instead of just having politics reign. Because if there's clear data that that's the best way and we have success, well, who has an argument with that at that point if it works?
Well, we do. I mean, I will say there are private and charter schools we know that do well. Like Montessori has a great reputation.
Absolutely.
I mean, there are those schools out there. I mean, we have schools in our neighborhood that are very well regarded, but those are the ones you've heard of because they're so good.
Well, and there's Plato is even run by our district, so it does do well because they follow what they're supposed to.
But I mean, there's tons of other, like what we refer to on the podcast, is like these Mickey Mouse schools that is just somebody just opened up like a 501c3 or something and mm-hmm. just decided to make their house a school now. And mm-hmm. and it's apparently not that difficult to do.
Oh, and I'm beating a dead horse here by saying this one as well, but these Montessori schools that do so well, they can cap enrollment. They don't right. have to worry about having class sizes of over 30 children, right? They can say, no, we're going to take 300 kids all year. And that's how they run their school. If I mean, again, I say this a lot. Can you imagine if public schools were just like, we're full, guys. Sorry, you yes. can't come.
Yes, sorry. I can imagine, actually.
Got to find somewhere else to go because you can't come here.
Find a different neighborhood school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Move somewhere else.
It's insane. So, I mean, yes, we can obviously understand why these other schools could be more successful than a public school. Right. I mean, it's there. You can see it. But at the same time, I want to ask Mary this question. We get a lot of kids that come back from charter schools. We mm-hmm. do. How do you find like their progress? Where do you find they are when they come into your school from your experience?
It depends on the school. Now, okay. like I said, Plato is really good. And there's a couple other schools that are in the area that are pretty good about keeping the information up to date. They send the folders. They send the information. We can call over to the school and talk to the, you know, the people in the office and find out information. But if they come from out of state or somewhere else, it's luck of the draw because it's not uniform and it's not across the board the same because everybody writes their IEPs differently. Every mm-hmm. state requires different stuff.
So even out of state, it's a little bit more work.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I think that Montessori, let's talk about that. That's an Italian-based system, right? I have seen different types of schools in different countries, and I have to say, Italy, for example, everybody's an artist in Italy. Why is that? Because they emphasize the arts from kindergarten all the way until it's college or job training time. You get artists. I've been in private houses and who painted this? Oh, that was my daughter. And yeah, this is grandpa. And it's very normal. So what that tells me is you really get what you put into the system. What are your priorities? And you can see it. The result will tell you what the priorities are, really.
The school that I graduated from is a performing arts high school in Osceola County, Florida. And I was in my art class. So this is my senior year. And I remember the teacher had given us just like a mirror, some charcoal pencils, and a piece of paper. And it was like the very first thing we did. And she said, just to see where everybody's at, go ahead and do like a self-portrait. And we were like, all right, cool. And of course, mine was janky. I'm not like a real artist. Everybody else's was like anime style. This one girl from Italy turns hers around and it's photorealistic. And she's just like, oh, this is all I could do in 5 minutes. And we were all like, unbelievable. Right. And she just came from a regular Italian school.
Yep. And that's what they do. I mean, my daughter's been in the school there and you can tell the difference. The priorities are visible. And I think that anybody that goes into another school, it may be another state or even within the district, you sense what's going on pretty fast. And the priorities are clear. For us right now, it's just a question, do we want to experiment with public schools a little bit more, maybe? Maybe we can dare a little bit more. If Montessori is so special, why can't we do it? Why can't we have the right support and have pilot projects going on? Why can't we cooperate with local universities, have pilot programs? If it doesn't work, the results should be worse. I will guarantee that any new idea that has some reasonable background will probably have a benefit. Why not experiment?
Yeah, but how are their football teams? That's really important.
That is important.
They don't have football teams. No, not going to qualify. Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a break, and when we get back, we're going to do our BASED Awards, guys, so stick around.
Hey, guys, it's Brennan. One of my goals moving into this podcast project was to have the voices of our listeners play an active role in sharing our message that Unions Public Schools, well, they're not going anywhere without a fight. And as we dive deeper into the themes of public education, teachers' unions, and political activism, we want to hear from you, our listeners. If you're a teacher, parent, even a member of the community, we extend an open invitation for you to send us a voice recording with your name, occupation, and why you're sticking with the union during these politically turbulent times. We love to play these recordings at the beginning of our episodes and share your thoughts with our listeners. You can send these recordings to PCTAFIRE, that's F-Y-R-E, pod, at gmail.com. Additionally, we encourage you to write to your representative and advocate for teachers' unions and public education. You can easily locate your representative by visiting www.myfloridahouse.gov/find-your-representative. Your voice can make a difference in supporting education and the future of our students. So take a moment to send us a voice clip and write to your representative. Let's work together to positively impact education for all.
Hello there. If you support the podcast, you can now donate directly to us from the link in the description. You can donate 99 cents, $4.99, or $9.99 monthly. Your donation can help get me, Aziz, off the streets.
Well, unfortunately, Aziz will always be on the streets. He yearns for the streets. But your support will go towards producing high-quality episodes just like the one you're listening to right now.
Your support helps us keep gas in the tank, food on our tables, and our classrooms full of pencils and paper. We all know edumacators all over America are undervalued and underpaid. Help us, mooks like me, continue to bring recognition and a voice to education professionals.
And we're back. So, as always, we're going to do our BASED Award, which is something that is agreeable or respectable. And with that, we're going to go and pass the puck off to our good friend, Philip Belcastro.
Oh, I get to go first.
You're our first person today.
Well, my BASED Award goes to the people of France. If you've been watching the news, the labor movement in France is wild right now. They've got their sanitation workers went on strike. Their public transportation people went on strike.
Good for them.
It is the most solidarity of solidarity, the entire nation right now. They shut the city of Paris down so thoroughly that there's like one story of trash heaped up everywhere. And I read, it sounds disgusting because it is. I mean, the city's covered in rats. But the people are said, you know what? This is because of, we're all doing this together and we are willing to live with the trash and the rats. The public transportation shut down the highways and buses and trains so thoroughly that people were wheeling their luggage down the highway to get to the airport. So they are all lockstep with one another, their union. And this is all over pension, which this is like France already has a very low like retirement age. And Macron is trying to raise it.
He
wants
from
to raise it.
62 to 64.
He wants to make it from 62 to 64 years old. What is America's right now? 89? I don't know.
I will never retire.
I think
never
it depends
retire.
On when you're born.
Yeah, I will never see it. So I'm not worried about it. But to the people of France, you are incredibly based in sticking up for each other and dealing with the trash, dealing with the transportation, and everybody doing it together to do what's right.
I'm going to Paris this June. So,
by then you may
have
see
that resolved.
Bring nose hopefully, plug. they take the trash out. I don't know.
You get to take the trash.
I don't know.
You get to take the trash.
I don't know if you're getting there. I think the airports are shut down. You might be swimming.
I guess I'm going to walk down the highway.
Well,
Rizal, what is your base award?
I have, this was an easy one. Shout out to all my geometry students that survived 3 quarters without having their phone for 45 minutes a day. And they're still alive. And for the most part, they were agreeable to the rule that I put up because no focus, no work, no learning. They are mostly, I think, buying into it now, although they probably still hate it, but they understand why.
How did they do it?
I don't know. I had to remind them once in a while. I start my lesson with just a quick reminder. The phones are powered off, stowed away, ideally in your backpack.
Ideally.
I do want to also say, Rizal is a very well-liked and very well-respected math teacher by the students. All the students love Miss Rizal. They do complain about the amount of homework that she gives.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, that's just the way it goes.
Gotta practice it in order to learn it.
Yeah, exactly. There's no way around that, guys. Yeah. It's just the way it is.
And she does phenomenal testing score numbers.
Yes.
So she gets results. The kids love and respect her. And that's from, as an English person who hated math class, that is very base. That
I
is
used
very
to hate
respectable.
Math too at some point. Now I love it. It's just
math.
Something to be math.
But hey, shout out to you because...
Something's working.
Something's
doing the Lord's work.
Yeah. I'm going to give a shout out to myself because
I
am not working this summer. I am taking the summer off.
Hey,
I'm not going to teach summer bridge. I'm not going to work credit recovery. I'm going to enjoy my summer and work on my house and do things around my house that I need to get done. And then come back to school in August when we're supposed to.
As refreshed as you possibly can be
after a full year. After a full year and only having 2 months off and spending a week and a half in Orlando.
Oh, no. You need a vacation from that.
NEA.
Yes. Yeah.
No, I'll be that's there too. The NEA. So we'll be partying it up in Orlando. So.
Well, you know, we're going to do a podcast episode every day for NEA. So maybe you could be on again then.
Oh, absolutely.
Does that
I
mean
will
I
do
have
that.
To go to Orlando? Because I will not.
That means you will have to
no,
be in Orlando.
No, I'm sorry. Oh. I'm putting all of this equipment on offer up as soon as we're finished.
I want to give a shout out to HCTA, our good friends across the bay. Emily and Nicole, if you're listening, shout out to you guys. They have obtained almost all of their demands through a special magistrate as of today.
Good for them.
Oh, yes. They went into impasse and they had salary adjustments since they had no raises for 2 years. That's always fun. They're getting supplement increases and they're also getting hourly supplement raises for ESP, that is education support professionals. They're doing great over there. They're celebrating. They're going to have a party tonight probably.
Yeah.
It's been a long few months. I think how long has it been since November, I think?
Oh, I don't know. It's been a long time. Emily gives me updates and it's hard to stay on top of it, but
and going into impasse is never
No, you don't know what's gonna happen.
You don't know what's gonna happen.
It feels funny in between, right?
So I'm sure they're all feeling a giant weight getting off their shoulders there and
absolutely.
It's this party time now.
So maybe if we get HCTA and PCTA together as if the people of France did and to march in solidarity.
Well, we need to march in solidarity.
Yes, we do.
We need to make sure that we're doing everything that we need to do to get all of us together.
Yeah. Sanitation, post workers, firefighters, police. Let's get all of them together. We need the French solidarity. They know how to do it.
Yes. They're showing us every day right now.
Absolutely.
But I eat freedom fries, so you can keep that.
All right, Ratatouille.
And I think with that, we're going to head off. So thank you again for listening to PCTA's Fire Podcast. As always, I'm Brennan.
I'm Philip.
Stephanie Roselle.
Mary Gressley.
Have a great day, guys. Peace out.
Thank you.
Hey, everyone. We would like to remind our listeners about important school board meetings taking place on March 21st and April 11th at 10 a.m., as well as a 5 p.m. meeting on April 25th. Remember, it's vital for teachers, parents, and community members to attend these meetings and advocate for public education. Your voice and presence can play a significant role in shaping the future of education and improving the lives of students in our community. We want to give a special thank you to Philip Bel Castro for providing our theme music, and Artifact for adding some great tracks into our intermissions. If you haven't already, be sure to check out Artifact's music at artifactjoints.bandcamp.com. We also want to express our gratitude to Radio St. Pete for airing our podcast, Jamie Beck, Brian Balton, Carla Correa, and Nancy Filardi, as well as all of our supporters in the education community. Your support and dedication has been instrumental to getting the word out and reaching new listeners. Well, that's all for today. I'm Brennan Pickett. You guys have a great day.